The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Another grand episode of the SDR show. You see how I work the word in? Why? Grandson is on the episode this week. And the story is this. I heard these guys like 4 or 5 years ago, loved the band, turned a bunch of my friends onto it, then found out it's just one dude. It's like, we got to get that dude. I heard he was going to be on Shiprock. Let's make it all happen. James Madden comes in on the show this week as well. That's right. And let me just say this. No, Jay didn't quit the show. Blah, blah, blah. It was a goddamn monsoon here, so we couldn't record in the studio. What are you going to do? That's what happened. All right? Jay sort of likes me, I believe. I want to believe it. Guy's a great dude, grandson. Really smart, really interesting guy. We get into like deep conversations on this episode. James Madden, as I said, comes on the show as well with me. And we do the show every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live, or just subscribe anywhere. That's what we care about most. You go to YouTube, you go to Spotify, you go to iTunes or Google Play, and just subscribe to the show. Tell people about it. That's all we care about. Right now, here it is, the grandson episode of the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host.
It is the SDR show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Shannon is not on camera today. We're not allowing it. She doesn't look right today, so we're just not showing her face. James Madden back in the co-host seat.
You better believe it, baby.
And to the fans of the show that watch these, I could tell you this. James, again, his bed was not made when we started. He made it now. I still think it's disrespectful to our guests when you don't do that, James.
First of all, no disrespect to our wonderful guest who hasn't been brought on yet, okay? But look, it was made-ish. I don't do like a great job.
Also, move to your left. I want you, the fans, to see your bizarre pillow placement. It doesn't make any sense. There's one out of the covers. There's one under. They're at odd angles. I don't like it.
Well,
just letting you know.
I had this one on the couch.
Why is that one there? What are you doing?
That was on the couch, man.
Fucking weird as shit. Okay, so right now, I'm going to start with this.
I'm walking out already.
I first heard this guy back in 2016, a song called Bury Me Face Down, and I was like, holy shit. This is a really cool, unique, different song. And I've just kind of been following his career since then. The full-length album came out, I think, towards the end of last year, called Death of an Optimist. We'll get into it. He's also now on the Suicide Squad soundtrack and a lot of other interesting things. The name of the band is Grandson. Grandson, how are you, buddy?
Thank you guys for having me to oversee this marital dispute that you guys
have. Yeah, believe me. We get heated sometimes, sir.
We need a moderator.
Stay as far away from that. I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm home in Toronto for the first time in a while. I'm hanging out, man. I'm gearing up to go play some shows again. I am waxed. I am vaxed. I am back, man.
I was thinking about that. The waxed, vaxed, maxed, something like that. I don't know what else you could say. There's got to be something else. You can make it on a t-shirt, you know, like a girl. Yeah. You know, a guy, wax, vax, Matt. I don't know. There's got to be a shirt there. That's what I was
thinking. I'll hit up my ghostwriters. I'll get them to crank some stuff out.
And then I get at least a piece of it because it's sort of my idea. All right. Yeah. The first thing I want to say, because this, when I saw this little bit of information, it was very near and dear to my heart, and I'll explain why. Okay. You are on the new Suicide Squad soundtrack. Two songs. One is a remix of a song that already existed, but one that you specifically wrote for Suicide Squad, right? And correct me if I am wrong. How this came about is James Gunn liked something on your Instagram and you DM'd him.
Yeah, it was Twitter, but that's
the story. Same difference.
No, that's it. That's it. It really did come together just like that. It's like a Cinderella story.
And you had no interaction with him whatsoever before. You noticed that he liked something and you took your shot.
Yeah, during the pandemic, I had, like any good artist, we spent the first like 3 months just going through an existential crisis, wasn't really sure what we were doing. But I started working on a song with a couple friends of mine, Sam Harris from a band called X Ambassadors, and Kay Flay, who's two great alternative artists, bands, whatever. So we got together and made a song called Zen, which was all about just needing to like close your eyes and take a deep breath and count to 10 when the world feels like it's falling apart. Mm. Put that song out, and in a true pandemic fashion, like I only met we wrote this song over a Zoom, like over a FaceTime, produced the song, wrote our parts in our respective apartments at the time, and recorded it. Mm. Put it online. Song went to like number one in Canada, 20 million plays online, all without ever having met in person. And I meet this guy for the first time, like at a house party a couple weeks ago. So
wow.
Story in and of itself is like a pandemic love story, just to make this creative baby together. And James Gunn, the writer and director of Suicide Squad, unbeknownst to me, was a fan who, he just tweeted the song one day, like it could just like pure fan, not trying to get anywhere. Just, hey, fans of mine, I'm James Gunn, and here's a song I've been listening to.
And he tagged you in that, obviously.
Yeah, so I think so. Or I might have had like a fan give me the like assist of the decade. And okay. I'm pretty sure. I don't even know if he's like just typing in, you know, grandson. It's not particularly easy to find me online unless right. you go looking for it. Anyways, a fan was like, hey, I don't know if you saw this. So I reached out to him and I just shot my shot.
And to me, by the way, fans of this show know that that is the only way I meet women, is I shoot my shot on Instagram and DM and have a surprisingly high closure rate.
I was going to say, how's that going for you?
It goes pretty well. Believe it, not so much right now with the pandemic, but in okay. general, surprisingly above my pay grade in quality to get straight from DM shots. So I'm a big fan of it. And not only did it work out, but he used one of the remix in a trailer, and then he used Rain like exclusively in one whole trailer. So that's pretty amazing. Did you get to see the movie before it came out so that you kind of wrote to the movie, or did you write and then the movie and they made it work out? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I had written the song and sent ideas back and forth with him and revised it a couple times and got my collaborator, Jessie Reyes, to hop on it. She's dope R&B alternative artist, hailing from Toronto as well. And I did get to see the movie after I had already written the song, after the song was in the movie. And it was the most, like archaic, I guess it's not, they have a lot riding on this thing, not getting leaked or anything, but I had to download like six different apps that all needed to work together. And I had to input a numeric
sign your life away to watch it
before it expired. And then I had just got locked out. I forget my password, of course. I don't want to hit James up. I don't want to piss him off. So now I'm on customer support. But finally, I did see the movie beforehand, and then I got to go to the screening, the premiere in Los Angeles.
Oh, that's good. So you didn't write to the movie. You wrote the song already, and it just happened to work in the context of the movie.
Yeah, you just couldn't have drawn it up any better. Little did I know, when I had made the song, there was already this like action sequence where roses are blooming behind Harley Quinn, and there's a rain shot. I mean, like I just got so lucky, and I wrote a song that was evocative and like very visual in a way that was in line with what he had already been planning. So yeah, the whole thing just worked out pretty
good. So quickly. I want to ask a question on that, and then I have a bunch of things to talk about, because obviously I am a real fan here. But a lot of your music deals with politics, deals with, I would say, anti-major corporation, you know, deals with empowerment and stuff. Almost, I think every song, by the way, has some sort of message behind it, right? Technically, this song was written and is a part of one of the biggest corporations in the world. Do you feel dirty, or do you feel like, hey, sometimes there's necessary evils, or what? Like, how did you internally make peace with that?
Right. I mean, it's 100% a valid question that I did ask myself at the time. I'll say two things to it. Number one, the song itself is about the difficult things that we go through in life and learning how to distill them into what they have to teach us. Taking some of the most traumatic moments of your life and we can alchemize that pain, whether it's a breakup, whether it's addiction, whatever your vice is, being able to appreciate, damn, as difficult as it was that I went through that thing, I would never want to do it again. I learned a lot from it, and I can one day appreciate how the pain that I went through can like lead to something amazing. Mm-hmm. So the song itself wasn't just like machine guns, Americana. It was a song that was about my mental health journey through the pandemic and learning to appreciate it. And I do feel at a certain point, depending on, I don't know if like ExxonMobil or like, you know, the Navy comes calling for a theme song. I think there are certain things that philosophically would be really antithetical to what I stand for. But this was just an opportunity for that message to get heard by like fuck ton of people.
You know? Sure. Did you ever sit down and jot a song called I Like Boobies and like, no, I can't release this. Do you ever do that? Or do they always have meanings?
I think that if I feel like so inspired by boobs, I'm usually just out there enjoying them, you know?
Fair enough.
I don't really feel the need to like go into the recesses of my studio. And as young as like 15, just making songs about the things I was going through gave me a reason to make the songs at all. And the other thing I will say, if anyone watches the movie, it is kind of a commentary on American imperialism. I don't want to spoil anything, but the bad guy ends up kind of not being who you might expect. And I appreciate it in having a conversation with James Gunn. He too is quite outspoken on social media. He is encouraging people to get vaxxed and trolling, you know, MAGA supporters. So I'm signed to Warner Records. Like, I'm signed to feel
right. Right. There is always going to be some element of that. They actually touched on it on the latest American Dad, where they were talking about climate change and how you have to make some deals with the devil to kind of improve things you want to improve. One thing I could say about in doing research on you and listening to you speak, it makes me realize how much better the Canadian school system is than the American, because your polysyllabic verbiage is batshit crazy. I get shit for this show because I am told I have, a fancy pants vocabulary, but I listen to you speak and I'm like, fuck, this dude's got a great vocabulary. And it's, even though you were born in Jersey, go ahead. Obviously Canadian schooling did well for you. Yes, James.
I was thinking the same thing. If I took the SATs before we had him on and then right now, automatically 50 more points. I guarantee you. Said
polysyllabic verbiage or something.
Well, I did that on purpose. But I'm just saying is that it is. I've been shit on a lot on this show that I use too big of words in context. Like I'm forcing them into the conversation. And you, I think it just tells you Canadian schooling is better than American schooling.
And he went to McGill.
Intimidated by smart people, you know what I mean? I understand, man. I understand your plight. I understand that some people give you a hard time for your expansive vocabulary, but you gotta own it.
I mean, you're cooler than I, so it's okay that you can do it and I can't. Yes, James, you were saying something?
I'm just so impressed right now. I really do feel like I'm a dum-dum and I should never open my mouth again.
This is correct, this. James. All of that is correct.
And the confidence, bro, the confidence when you use these words. I want to run through a wall.
I love it. It just shows you. It tells you that we need to fix shit at our school system. A thing that I hosted for 10 or 11 years. I don't know if I'm doing it next, but you're going to be on it. Shiprock next year, right?
Wow. Yeah.
I hosted that thing since it started.
Can you give me some foul Shiprock stories, please?
And I will just tell you this. Everybody that goes on it always wants to come back. That's the best way I can put it. I've never heard a negative story about it. It becomes, they also talk about the Shiprock bump, where every band that goes on Shiprock, you're going to start seeing a marketed improvement of your local audiences in strong Shiprock states where they come from. But I love it. I mean, I did it for, I'm just too old now, so I don't know if I want to do it again. I started doing it when I was in my 30s, and I'm 51 now, so I don't know if I can handle it anymore. You know, I leave it to the young guys.
I got an offer. I get my booking agent. He calls me and goes, I have a gig. I don't know if you're going to want to do it. I'm like, he's like, you're going to lose money on it, by the way. This is not something that I think you should do. You're gonna probably, everyone's gonna have to take a pay cut. You guys are gonna go to Galveston, Texas. and you're going to spend 5 days on an all-inclusive cruise to Mexico, and you got to play two sets. You got to play two shows, and like he rattles off the names, and there's a couple of my friends playing, and it was just like, after a year and a half inside, this is a company retreat, baby.
Yeah, that's what I tell people, by the way. I tell bands, if you can, try and play the first and second night, because then you're vacation.
Right.
You know? So if you can do that, I don't know how much pull they have.
Oh, my voice is going to be gone. I'm going to be sunburnt to shit.
It is fun. Shannon, you can't see Shannon, but Shannon, we went last year or the year before, Shannon?
I think the year before.
Yeah, I brought Shannon. Shannon is not a big rocker, but Shannon, did you enjoy it?
I did. I had a really good time. And everybody on the ship is so cool. Like, everybody's very nice.
I have no idea what to expect. I felt there's only two kinds of people when I tell them that I'm going to go play a rock and roll cruise in January. It's either, can I come, or hell no, you're going to catch some sort of new air waterborne disease for sure. Yeah, never getting off that boat.
Yeah. I have an uncle who is quite wealthy and he's a little older. And I said, how much would it take to get you to go on that boat? And he said, it would have to be $2 million for him to do it. That's how much he doesn't want to be.
Some people would not be caught dead. I'm not one of those people. I'm here to have a good time. And like, so much about why I do this, you guys, is about the adventures, the experiences I pick up on the way. Like my little rock and roll Boy Scout badge. Like, you give me a cool opportunity, even if it is a shit show, it just is.
You're going to get a couple of badges on that trip for sure. It's definitely one of those things. Yeah, it definitely is wild. And also, I had friends that went to Lollapalooza, and you played on the same stage right before Tyler, the Creator. I think, how was that experience?
It was wild. It was wild. I went from, playing in my shower for the last year and a half to 10,000 people. So it was cool. A lot to process in the moment. Spent a lot of nights during 2020 just thinking about when I was going to get back up there. Mm-hmm. What did I have to tell people? Am I going to fuck it up? Suddenly you're up there and it's a hard balance trying to like make sure that you're checking all your boxes while also just being present for your life as it's passing by. I'm sure it doesn't matter. You don't have to be a rock musician to be able to relate to that feeling of, here's this big once in a lifetime opportunity. Am I gonna spend the whole time like nervous, making sure it goes perfectly, or am I gonna be able to just be present in it and enjoy it and be myself? That's something that I definitely struggle with. But that moment, thankfully I had a whole hour up there, so I had a lot to get around.
That's great. That's awesome. I didn't realize your whole hour.
It's a marathon. That's like 20 songs. That's like 18 songs. So you get through the first four or five and you're nervous and you're anxious, and then you kind of take a swig of water and you look up and there's just thousands and thousands of people who are there to celebrate, to throw down, to have a good time. And you just get out of your own head and let your ego aside and just try and have fun with it and try to facilitate their experience.
James?
I'm just saying, man, sir, you're probably half my age, and I feel like the level of wisdom. I feel like I'm listening to fucking Tolstoy. Like,
you know why? It's Canadian schooling. It's unbelievable. Canadian schooling.
I went to school in Nevada. I mean, holy shit. They should just not
Nevada,
even have
Nevada College, you just need a pen and they let you in.
Everyone's embezzling their money in Nevada. No one's putting any taxes into the public school education.
We don't know shit, but I could bet the Giants -7 when I was 14. So there you go.
By the way, Grandson, I think James has understood 40% of the words you've been using on this interview.
I've never been more impressed in my life. This is unbelievable.
Before we go any further, I got to tell you, sometimes I feel like an idiot when I talk about the sponsors on the show because I am such a privileged idiot. That's the best way to put it. But hey, if you're an auto mechanic and a super cool do-it-yourself guy who likes to work on their own cars, I want to tell you about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best prices. This is your one-stop shop for everything auto parts. Rockauto.com has been in the business for 20 years, and they make it easy to find the parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order parts and aren't even really sure what you're looking for. They never have quite what you need. And then also, you're still going to pay the storefront markups. Not at rockauto.com. You can find everything you need easily, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just some dude working on your own car. Everyone has access to the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. So if you're a car guy, rock on over to rockauto.com and check out all the parts available for your car. You're just going to have fun looking at all the parts available. Once again, it's rockauto.com. They're so confident they don't even have a discount code. That's how well they know that they have the best prices. When you go to rockauto.com, though, let them know you heard about them on the SDR show. All right, let's get back into it.
So the full-length album, I want to give you credit for this. I did radio for a very long time. I had a show that was on about 100 stations in rock radio, did that for over a decade, and then started this podcast six years ago. I would tell bands for the last 10 years, this is what you do. Release singles, every once in a while put out an EP, and then put out an album. Nobody ever fucking listened to me. And I'm not saying you listen to me because we don't know each other, but that is what you've been doing. And that is the way to embrace what's going on today for social media, for easily digestible, for Spotify playlists. And you are 100% doing it right. Was that planned or did that just kind of happen organically?
Listen, you can't teach putting an album out in the middle of a pandemic when no one can tour it and nobody has any attention span. You can't teach that level of marketing. No, it was always from the jump. Like I for the first couple of years, I was just another song on a playlist. That is, for better or worse, how people were finding my music, coming to me. And I had a clear sense of, even from the very first couple songs, I think I was beginning to have a sense of what I wanted to say and use this platform for if and when I got there. I had an idea for the aesthetic and like what a broader, more cohesive project would look like, but I just didn't see the rush. And we just kind of slow dripped it out for a while and tried to ramp up. And I got that from hip hop more than anything.
Right. That's true. That's what they always do. Cause it's funny. I think I do that. Bury Me Face Down is probably 4 or 5 years ago when I first heard that. And now the first album just came out at the end of last year. So it's like you took 4 years. I mean, you put out EPs and stuff, but a real actual album comes out 4 years later. I think it's brilliant. The interesting thing is your music is extremely hard to define. There's elements of rap. There's elements of almost like electronic and whatnot. There's a lot of rock, heavy guitars, especially in the album. But I read your mom was a piano teacher. Your dad wrote music, and they exposed you to a lot of different things. And that's where it came from, do you feel?
This journalism, man. Yes, all of the above. I think that a big part of it was my parents having a musical background, but even more so was living in a city like Toronto growing up. I was exposed to a lot of different music. I am like, depending on how you look at it, like an early Gen Zer or like a late millennial. I was born in the 90s. I grew up in like LimeWire, Kazaa. I listened to music a song at a time. I wasn't going into my record store with my $10 that I earned from my paper route. Like, I was illegally streaming music from the time I was a child, you know?
And people.
So I think because of that, my music I never felt the need to like go sit in the rock section or the hip hop section. I was definitely a hip hop fan growing up more than anything. But I did listen to some rock bands and I played a bit of acoustic guitar and stuff. But I always just felt like my music was like a cheap caricature of the other artists that I was influenced by. And one day I would want to wake up and be a rapper like J. Cole or Mac Miller or Kendrick Lamar. And then another day I would wake up and want to be a DJ. But, you know, when I was in college, I did a lot of Molly and, you know, went to raves and I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I never want to leave. And then there were other days where I would, you know, be singing and playing guitar. And I just kind of couldn't find my place until I decided to just try and be all those things while also just being myself for the first time. So I do think it was actually just a product of the environment I grew up in, beyond music aside, just being a kid from the 90s and what was going on around us, being the youngest sibling. My sisters have really good taste in music, so I picked it up from them. And it's alternative at the end of the day when people ask.
I guess that's, but alternative just means it's such a broad umbrella. I feel like it discredits pigeonholing someone as alternative. It just means not mainstream, which I just don't like that term. But what else is interesting is that you started as a ghostwriter. You wrote for other people. When did you make, was there like a catalyst that made you say, aha, I no longer want to write for someone else. I want to do this on my own now.
To be honest, I was like struggling and failing at being an artist back then, and I'm still trying to write for other artists now. Like, the ghostwriting thing was a great sabbatical where I just got to make it about music. I didn't have clear answers at the time for like why. The why that should resonate with everybody when they're picking their, whether it's their career or their human that they're going to spend their time with. Like, I'm a very overanalytical Jewish guy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have an answer for like why I was doing it. I just loved songwriting. I loved being in the studio and smoking weed and coming up with ideas. So I did a lot of writing for other artists, a lot of which, you know, got left on the cutting room, you know, like never came out. But just waking up every day and having a new, whether it was like a pop artist that was in development or a band or a rapper, like all those things gave me an opportunity to apply these different parts of my musical background. And in watching other bands that I was around in Los Angeles, I got a better sense of what would it look like when I'm the band leader. But that was always going to be my goal.
You knew that from the beginning. This was just, it was a stepping stone, if you will, to get your chops going.
And I still love doing it. You know, there's some great artists I've had the opportunity to work with, to write for, whether it's folk artists, hip hop stuff, rock stuff. For me, you know, the self-promotion, the marketing, the branding, all that is, it's important. It's important through the lens of I have something to offer to the world and I want to make sure that I'm doing these songs the best I can. I don't want to do them a disservice, pour my heart into some song and then not give a shit if anyone hears it or not. Like, what's the point? Right. So it is important to me, but it is kind of exhausting. I kind of oscillate between being very creative, very inspired, and being very methodical about, okay, what the fuck am I going to do to get people to hear it? And songwriting, both for myself and for other people, is a way for me to just throw all that aside. I'm still a romantic. At the end of the day, I still think if you write a beautiful song, if you write a song that resonates with people, then that thing will do what that thing does. You can dress up a turd, but at the end of the day, it's still a turd.
Mm-hmm. Do you think my song "I Like Boobies" has legs, or dude, you don't think?
I think it's poignant, man. You got to figure out what to do with it when we make the titty anthem. But
you mentioned this on your marketing. I have some questions on that. So number one, the X's over the eyes. Where was that something you always did? Did someone suggest that? Like that became synonymous with you? Is that like where did that come from?
That came from like growing up watching like Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z and like anime. And I just loved like the characters fainting, this conveying of like death or getting knocked out or something. And so much of my music, as we've spoken about, touches on social issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of that had to do with when you come into your 20s and your parents and your politicians and your teachers, they all start suddenly seeming a lot more human and a lot more fallible. Mm-hmm. And you start doing away with some of the more dogmatic, you know, some of the things that were taught, what it means to be an American, what it means to be a white guy, what it means to be a fan of one thing versus another. The real world is a lot more nuanced, a lot more complicated. So those X's just kind of symbolized for me a certain death of that idealistic way of looking at the world from which a more angry, brooding version of myself.
But the interesting thing is, I have to imagine when you came up with that, you didn't know 5 years ago that the name of your album would be Death of an Optimist, but then it seems like it all kind of tied together, you know?
No, if I had known, you know, how many kids now have the X's tattooed on them and how many people resonate with it, the funny part is I might have even gotten more worried that I could get it wrong and would have never put anything out. Right. I would have been so worried about that responsibility. Right. I mean, when we first started, it was just like, that would be cool. And for me, rock music is like a nostalgia trip. You know, that's something my parents grew up on.
I get it. I'm old.
I was a hip hop kid. So for me, there was this element of nostalgia I wanted to incorporate, which was where the name Grandson came from. And it was where at just everything was black and white. And I was just kind of, you know, kicking the can down. It's like, there's nothing more fragile than an idea. Like when you're a creative, when you're an artist, it's so arbitrary. The name that you pick, all that matters is that you pick it and that right. you just get started, you know?
And nobody cares that, like, when Google, they realized it was spelled wrong, they just stuck with it. It didn't matter. I read you had 40 names at one point and you decided on Grandson. Do any of the shitty ones stick out in your head that you want to share with us that you were almost named?
You know what? I've never said this publicly, but I'll say one that I didn't. We weren't that close, but I was looking for like literary characters that I was inspired by, and I tried to put some together. I was a big fan of Calvin and Hobbes growing up, and I had the name. I had a running name of Milo Hobbes for like 3 weeks. It was a disaster. It was not good. What the fuck does that sound like?
That's funny.
Butterfly effect, an entire different universe.
Yeah, it's so funny. Who came up with the term grandkids for your fans? Was that you or came out through fans?
Kid. I was a kid. I source it. I let people, you know, I ask them, like, because I admire fan bases where that sort of identity of being a fan is really baked into the culture. 21 Pilots was a big influence for me on the community building, Linkin Park as well. Just these cult followings. I knew that I wanted to build something like that. And so I just asked the kids.
Well, you actually segued me nicely because Death of an Optimist, which has both Travis Barker and Mike Shinoda worked on it, Linkin Park and Blink-182. Did you know them ahead of time? How did that come about?
Shinoda is just the nicest music nerd. Like, you would just have no idea if you meet him how much he's accomplished and what an incredibly brilliant guy he is. He was just a fan. He reached out to me through social media when I had my song Bloodwater starting to take off. And he just became kind of a mentor of mine. He helped me understand and navigate boundaries with fans on social media. He helped me and helps me with just what we were talking about, making peace with the journey itself and not being too fixated on where you're trying to get. You know, being able to talk to a mentor like that who's been everywhere, like, what more as a, you know, aspiring musician could I do than what Linkin Park accomplished? Sold a gazillion records and played the biggest arenas in the world.
Right.
Travis, I did meet in the writing of the album. He was doing some sessions. He was already making this transition into being the like mega producer that he's become over the, during the pandemic. The Machine Gun Kelly album was still, being finished. And, I had the chance to link up with him at his studio and, we did, I think, 3 songs in 2 days. Just, it was so cool, you know, and that you look over and you're like, yeah, that's still Travis Barker. That's that.
Did you do your Linkin Park cover before or after you met Shinoda?
That was after. That was definitely after they asked me if I would contribute something. Hybrid Theory, which was my favorite Linkin Park album, turned 20 and they wanted to do something special. So they got me and they got Jason, who is a friend of mine from a band called Fever 333, to reimagine different songs. Jason got in the end, and I'm still a little sore about it.
your Rage cover, well, that one, I see it, you know, it's a modernized version of it. Your Rage cover sounds nothing like the original, which is pretty wild. That's a pretty unique take on that. With the album Death of an Optimist, is that you? Did you find yourself used to be more optimistic, or is that just a general concept? I think
That's
broke
a fair
them.
Question, and you'd think I would have been asked it by now. You know what? I think my takeaway from making that album was that like courage and having the, whether it's like delusion or the bravery to give a fuck about what's going on in the world and what you can do to be a positive contribution to, the problems that we face is not about the absence of cynicism. It's not about like being completely devoid of doubt. It is about moving through that doubt. And if I am to just blindly trust that President Biden's got climate change figured out. President Biden's got this figured out, so we can all hang up our hats. That is the very place that so much disillusion stems from. So for me, the album was about navigating. Like, I've been making, as you said, political music, socially charged music since 2017. Mm-hmm. And it was a very different America at that time. Trump had just been elected. Gun violence was, at an all-time high and only rising. And then I'm looking at my debut album 3-4 years later, and so many of the social issues that I had taken up at that time appear to have so little done in that time.
Well, and as someone who's 20 years older than you, get used to it. They ain't going anywhere.
I bet. You know, how many of these Columbines, how many of these Sandy Hooks, like how many of these things until you just completely lose any hope that anyone's going to give you shit about anything? And it's a valid question. I don't think it's wrong to ask, but what am I going to do? Like, am I going to just make another political fuck you album and keep my enemies that I sing about very vague and keep my goals very abstract? Or am I going to make an album that is actually autobiographical in my doubt on whether I'm making any difference or not? Mm-hmm. That was how I tried to go about it. It was an ambitious project, especially to do in a pandemic, but it gave me something to chew on creatively. It gave me purpose last year in a way that I fucking needed it pretty badly. And I'm really proud of that album. And
it's a great record. It really is a great record.
Thank you, man. And, you know, we teamed up with Gibson Guitars and with an organization called Headcount to get out the vote. And we helped register 5,000 people to vote in last year's election. We raised over 10 grand for charities to do with social justice in June when the George Floyd riots were breaking out. And we were able to do all that from lockdown, from a pandemic.
I want to just interrupt for one second. I feel that James is Googling 80% of the words you're saying. And B, I feel that he's questioning his humanity as he's listening to what you've been doing.
I'm just thinking, I mean, the name's grandson. I mean, if you were my grandson, I would be that annoying. I would just pull pictures out to strangers. I'd be like, this is my boy. And I would pull like audio of you and be like, listen what he's fucking doing during the pandemic and to make change. What is your
You sound a lot more Jewish than Mexican right now.
Dude, let's be quite honest. There's no way I'm not Jewish.
Yeah, I mean, think you're Jewish.
If there was a Fourth Reich, they're going to believe that my dad was from Monterey. No, it's not fucking happening.
Let me ask you this. Yeah, James. Sorry.
I'm just gonna say this: I just met you, sir. But if I woke up every day with a voice memo from you, my bed would be made. I'd make the neighbors' beds. This man just brings.
James. It ain't working for me.
Shit.
It didn't work when I asked you to make your bed. So maybe he could get you to make your fucking bed.
You didn't pontificate in the most eloquent way I've ever heard for the last 30 minutes. Man is playing symphonies.
Hey, pontificate, man. That's a good one for you, James. See, let me ask you this:
he made me smarter.
You were born in New Jersey. You raised in Canada. Do you identify more as one or the other, or do you consider yourself a true dual citizen?
I consider myself a dual citizen, not only because it is the politically correct thing to say. You know, I'm playing shows in both countries, baby. Let's go.
A lot of bands do that. That doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
No, I do think that so many of my attitudes towards the world stem from growing up in Canada. Like, mm-hmm. Of course, healthcare should be a right. Of course, conservatives and liberals in this country come together and tell you to wear your mask. Like, these certain issues are just not politicized. What it means to be Canadian is far more intact than what it means to be American. And it's far more bipartisan. There's so many issues in Canada around the exclusion of Indigenous people, and being Canadian is a conflict in and of itself. We're not perfect up here, but I do think that there are certain things that we could learn from in America. Just about certain things are off the table in an election. Certain sensationalized media is still frowned upon. Like, if you take a low blow at your opponent politically, you look like a jackass still in Canada. In America, that part of things feels like a race to the bottom. But at the same time, the opportunity, the ambition, the promise of I'm going to start singing these songs and I'm going to play them in stadiums. Like, what's more American than that? You know, I think that there's lots of Canadian bands that stay in Canada. They still tour outside of Canada. They do their thing, but there's definitely a ceiling in the sky in some ways being in the entertainment industry in Canada. Mm-hmm. I think that's changing a lot and I'm very excited about that and proud of that. But yeah, I moved to Los Angeles to make shit happen and like a lot of Canadians do. So I'm proud. Yeah,
nobody says I'm moving to Montreal to make shit happen. That doesn't really happen.
Right,
you know?
Right. And it depends on what you're trying to make happen.
Right, I guess that's true. Do you feel, and by the way, we're interviewing another, I guess he's a little older because they're probably a generation or two before you. Our Lady Peace, another Canadian band's coming on the show soon. So they're a big Canadian band.
Let them know I say what's up. I mean, Our Lady Peace, Tragically Hip, the Arkells more recently, the Glorious Sons more recently. These are bands.
Glorious Sons is a great band. I love Danko Jones. I grew up with Triumph and Rush. I mean, that I always felt that there was a thing about three-piece bands and Canada because Danko Jones, Rush, and Triumph are all three-piece bands, which I thought was kind of weird.
Hey, Glorious Sons, you know, they're in America. They're grinding it out in a Sprinter van, playing opening slots. You know, they go into Toronto and play to 25,000 people.
Right. You hear those stories a lot.
Across Canada, there are certain bands that are just staples of what it means to be a Canadian. Mm-hmm. And I love those dudes in there. And them first tour I ever went on was with them, and I learned a lot from them. But yeah, just being in America, going to the Mecca, and just meeting up with all these people from all over the world who flock to America because they want to make shit happen. That's the pond that I've been swimming in.
So here's a question, because you obviously we've touched on this a few times, but your songs are either, there's always a message. A lot of the times it is political, right? So do you feel that A, you might be cutting out half of a potential audience because of the subject matter, and B, how do you, I mean, I'm sure this happens all the time, but it's a very common thing, especially in the United States, where people say, look, just shut up and play music. I don't want to hear your fucking political ideas. You know, like, so yeah. Those two things could eliminate a big part of your fan base. And one is how you could say, well, fuck those guys. But, you know, you are in this business to make money as well. So I don't know. I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah. On one hand, it is kind of fuck those people. That's definitely a big part of my thought process when it comes to that kind of stuff. I do think that there are lots of people that enjoy my music at face value for cool guitar riffs. And, you know, a lot of people work out to it or, you know, game to it and just are able to hear the noises without digging deeper. A lot of people have no idea what my shit is about. In the same way, when I was 14, getting ready to run in my track meet to Rage Against the Machine,
yeah,
I wasn't about to join the Zapatistas or protest that, you know, join the LA riots.
I didn't know She Bop by Cyndi Lauper was about masturbating until I was about 25.
I just learned that right now.
I thought it was about the Zapatistas, so I'm all
right.
Goddamn
right.
Nevada. Nevada education screwed it all up.
So, no, I mean, like, I talked to Tom Morello about this, you know, like, it was this big thing. Paul Ryan came out, you know, big Republican. Yeah, mm-hmm. Republican everyman, corrupt asshole, works out to Rage Against the Machine, works out to Killing
That's
in the Name.
That's funny. That's funny.
And it was like, you know, my song Bloodwater became this, like, it's been used on protests about two people protesting against each other. Like, different people hold up this sign that says, you know, we'll never get free, lamb to the slaughter, blah, blah, blah. Like the lyrics from my biggest song. It completely different ends of the spectrum politically.
That's wild. So, that's really funny when you see things. I know, like, I've heard stories over the years where artists have called up political people and said, can you please stop using my song at your rallies? They did not endorse that. So I'm sure that's going
to
happen.
Thankfully, it's never come to that. Thankfully, I haven't had to let the Trump campaign or, like, you know, Marjorie.
That happened with a friend who's been on the show, Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. He had to call Trump and say, please stop using my song, which is pretty wild. All right, before we go any further, if you are listening to the show and you are over the age of 21, you should already know about Yo Kratom, YoKratom.com. They are, you said it with me, the home of the $60 kilo. How much? That's right, $60. For what? I just said it, a kilo. That's right. If you're currently a fan of Kratom, you can get your best quality Kratom at YoKratom.com for just $60 a kilo. No more going to a gas station, going to a bodega,
no idea how long that bag's been sitting on the shelf. Just go direct to the source, yokratom.com. They are the wholesaler. They have incredible prices. They have a ton of variety. And you get a $60 kilo always at yokratom.com. These are the guys that, you know, Shannon uses, everybody in the office uses. They are sponsoring our form of content, every show on the network. I think they're still sponsoring Skankfest. So you want to support the sponsors that support the shows to keep our network going. And that's why we love them so much. YoKratom.com, home of that $60 kilo. So head on over there now. Treat yourself to a $60 kilo of Kratom while we get back into it.
Quickly, we don't have too much time left with you, but a couple of quick things. One that I found fascinating, like blood, you touched on blood water. I guess not blood in the word, blood slash water is how it's written. A former guest on this show, Aaron from AWOL Nation, did a great remix of that. A great, great dude. But it's an interesting story, and I could be fucking wrong with this, but again, you know, I tried to do as much research as possible. Your first, like, label where you were dropped from, and then because of Canadian content law, your song got played, got bigger, Blood Water, and then now you're on Fueled by Ramen. So in a way, thank God for Canada, Canadian content rules. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, I think that there's whole lot that you can do for your artists and for your country when you're not spending half your taxes on war every year. When you don't have a $1 trillion Pentagon budget, you're actually able to do all kinds of things. And in Canada, that looks like a very generous grant system for Canadian artists. And it looks like reinforcing through broadcast laws, playing a certain percentage of your airtime has to go to Canadian artists or artists that meet a certain criteria to be judged Canadian content. And when I was an independent artist, having just gotten dropped from a label, you know, with no money, that really did help continue to build the perception that I had some momentum and that, you know, somebody needed to come help me out and finance this thing. That really helped. So I'll always be grateful for that. And going back to Aaron and AWOL Nation, another dude who really paved the way for alternative music, who was in punk bands growing up and, you know, hip hop and synth pop. And like, you know, so there's a lot of dudes that have that walked before me that I'm trying to take the baton from as far as what alternative music means, for sure.
It's just such a broad spectrum. But I've always loved AWOL Nation. Great. And he was a super cool dude as well. To go back to my favorite song, I mean, you're one of your first, Bury Me Face Down, which is not on the record, but the record's awesome as well. Is it true that you wrote that song in less than 30 minutes?
I banged that shit out. And again, it was like I had gotten a call that we were maybe up for, I got to write a theme song. I had one song out, and somehow my manager knew somebody, and it was like, well, they're looking for a theme song. Can you make something? Here's the pitch. And it was very Tarantino. I just thought of Kill Bill when she's got the finger punch. And it's like, you could just count me out and you could just, you know, you could just write me off, but you better bury me face down. I pictured what would happen if she'd been buried the wrong way. She punches her way out and just kind of keeps sticking to the center. And so, yeah, I just kind of wrote this idea, very, very half-assed, lazy, kind of like, and sometimes those are the best creative moments where you don't even allow yourself the opportunity to second guess it.
Right.
We sent it in, didn't get that, you know, they passed on it, but we ended up with a cool song. We were like, fuck it, let's put it out. And now it's been listened to like nearly 100 million times.
Yeah, hundreds of millions of times. It's crazy. I mean, you know, Black Sabbath wrote Paranoid in 20 minutes. So it's just, it's what happens. You know, sometimes it just happens. You said in an interview that you've lost your mind a little bit during the pandemic. And even though this album is your new album, you wrote like crazy. Are you already having enough for new singles? I don't imagine you're going to release another album right away, because that would be the opposite of what you've been doing so far. But I imagine you've written a lot.
Yeah, totally. And the biggest thing for me being stuck in my house for a year and a half was I just miss picking the brains of other great creative people. So,
well, just call me whenever you want, dude. I'll share my brain with you.
Please, let's go. Let's pontificate.
It's time to get I Love Boobies out to the people. That's it. Yeah, it's time. Stop fucking pussyfooting. God
it's
damn it.
Time. Come on, bro.
Dude, if there's a song on your next record called I Love Boobies, you better be sending me a royalty check.
I will. You get 5%. So that's that. I do have some more music coming, and a lot of it is just more collaboration, working with some of the artists that inspire me. shooting my shot in the DMs, as you know a thing or two about.
Yeah, I'm good. You know, got nothing. I saw you remixed some other artists today. I saw that in your Instagram story.
Yeah, Death From Above, 1979.
Oh, word.
Legendary electronic rock group from Canada. Yeah, I'm having fun with it. Like, I love making shit. It's probably my favorite part is the eureka moment where I think we've stumbled on something great and I can picture a lot of people enjoying it. That really gives me purpose when I wake up in the morning and go sit with my acoustic guitar. And then all these other parts of how do I make sure that people feel heard? How do I amplify this message to more people that need to hear it? That stuff is also exciting, but yeah, I've been doing a lot of work, so I'm going to keep grinding them. And finally, I get to start playing some of these songs live.
Live, yeah, let's hope. As long as the Delta variant doesn't kill off half the country, you'll be able to do that. One thing I'll give you credit for, so, I mean, a couple of the songs, I love Dirty, I think Riptide, WWE, you know, World War III, all great songs. But I watched you do it live, and what's very interesting is that, and I forget who said this, but it's a really true quote, which is, a great song, no matter how produced and big the production is, should always work acoustic. That's when you know it's a great song. And I watched you do three songs live at the Pace Studios acoustic, and they fucking sound great acoustic. That's really cool to do that, because we tried to get you guys to perform an acoustic song live, but I think it was hard to get your guitarist in the world we live in right now.
Dude, well, and hopefully this will all be over soon. We can do this in person for round two. Now you guys got to invite me back.
You got to come to New York City, and we'll do it for sure.
Please, please, I'm there. I'm actually, if you guys are based in New York, I'm playing the state fair. If you guys feel like road tripping up to Syracuse,
whoa, that's a little bit of a journey. But
on the Greyhound, you guys, come on.
I'm an old man. I got a creaky back. You know, I'm going to start complaining.
No, yes, man. We're going to go old school. We're going to put our thumbs out, and we're going to hitchhike to see our boy. We hitchhike into Q's.
We've got stand-up intro. Please, man.
One thing that I would say astonished me, and then we'll ask the first and wrap this up. You said that you aren't satisfied with anything that you've accomplished so far. That's weird.
Dude, I was probably in a very bad place with my mental health when I said that. That's definitely something I'm working on. Thank you for calling me out on that.
Yeah, it's weird, man. That's all I'm going to say. It's fucking weird. As I do another show on health and wellness every week, and listening to a lot of what you say gets mirrored a lot on that show about finding your inner peace, living in the moment. Oh. Those type of things are so important. So I thought it was batshit crazy when you said that. If I was in Canada, I'd slap you upside the head. I don't care.
My therapist would be like, what do you pay me for? What the fuck are we doing here? So,
all right, Shannon, we got to do the first right now because we don't want to keep any longer.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, the SDR show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time. We start with rock and roll, and we ask you, it doesn't have to be rock, but the first concert you went to on your own volition. I want to go see this show, and hopefully it's something we know, but I have a feeling it's not going to be something we know, but we'll see.
All right, I've got a couple for you guys. Mm-hmm. When I was in grade 8, I had a friend whose older brother got us tickets for a show called Umphrey's McGee.
Oh, yeah.
Jam band. Fish, Grateful Dead style, like, you know, bunch of Stone Jews rocking out together. But it was the same night as John Mayer Continuum. I remember being so mad that the tickets were so expensive. My mom wouldn't I spent like $15 to go to Umphrey's McGee. And while I was there, we're waiting for them to come out. And I'm just so upset. And I'm like humming Gravity by John Mayer to myself in an act of my earliest protest. Was like, I don't need to be with these fucking hippies. Like, my heart is with John Mayer. They came out and I proceeded to have the best night ever. It was like a 4-hour.
That's nice. That's cool.
Jam bands, they don't know how to stop. Their songs are 17 minutes long. It was so cool. I was like, I don't know what this smell is in the room, but it smells great in here.
How old were you? Grade 8. You said, which, by the way, sounds more Canadian than saying grade 8, because here we say eighth grade, but that's about 12, I think, right?
I was like 13, and that was it. I loved music, and I loved getting high, and those two things started there.
All right, so now, we ask you the first drug you ever did, ideally after pot, unless pot wasn't the first drug you ever did.
The first drug that really fucked me up was a drug called Salvia.
Oh, I know
you
what that
get
is.
It over the counter. I don't know what this stuff is medicinally for, why you can get it in these random smoke shops in Toronto. And since then, I've spent a certain decent amount of time experimenting in psychedelics, and I've never had an experience like being 14 and smoking this shit.
Jeez.
Is like a visceral, really visual high. It lasts 15 minutes. It feels like it's like a lifetime.
You hear that about DMT a lot, that it lasts 15 minutes and seems like it's been a week.
Right. So I remember, we used to smoke that out of a bong like when we were like 15, and now none of us have a short-term memory. it was a great time. And then one time I did it, and it was like, I don't think I want to be high anymore. And that's not how it works, you know? And you first start coming up and you're like, Ooh, I don't know. And that was the end of that.
End of your salvia time.
Yes. Okay. If there's any kids watching this, just do it once and then never do it again.
Fair enough. And then lastly, the first time grandson had sex.
First time grandson had sex was funny because I'm in my parents' basement in Toronto during this taping. And this isn't the room, but this is the basement. This is ground zero, my friends. I had a friend that was a girl. She was more experienced than I was. We weren't dating or anything. You know what? Growing up in the environment I did, and I've had to undo a lot of this, like, sex was wrapped up in conquest. It was very like, you got to lose your virginity and you got to lose it fast. You got to lose it quickly. And you got to get as much under your belt as you possibly can before you go to college. Mm-hmm. And in retrospect, I don't think that's the healthiest attitude to have towards sex and towards like the objectification of the people that you're having sex with. But it was definitely one of those, like, my friend
Was it once with her and only once and done? Or did it actually happen a few times after the first time?
I think it happened a couple times. Mm-hmm. I don't think I told her that I was losing my virginity. I think I said that, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing. You know, I had dry humped somebody's leg one time and I was like, yeah, I've lost my virginity. And then, and then you have sex with the first time. You're like, oh, I'm having sex for the first time.
Yeah, we had Ray Romano on the show, from Everybody Loves Raymond. And he told a story, his first time having sex. He they planned it out with the girlfriend. They were all ready. The parents were away. They had sex. The next morning he says, are you okay? You know, how did you feel about it? And she goes, what are you talking about? He goes, well, we're not virgins anymore. And he goes, no, you fucked my thigh. You were never inside of me. Which is fucking hilarious. He had never told that before, which is great that he told that on the show.
The only difference is that I knew that I was fucking, right. I knew. I didn't want to admit it, but I knew.
By the way, a follow-up to I Love Boobies, fucking thigh has some story. That had some legs. I think
maybe it's like an I Love Boobies and then in brackets, fucking thigh.
Yeah. There we go. Yes, James.
What about a book called I Fucked My Own Thigh? That's a good one.
That's a strange
piece. Dude, how low are you hanging, my friend?
I'd like to take it up a notch, boys.
Okay. So grandsonmusic.com, @grandson on Instagram and Twitter. The new album, which not that new, but it's just a great album, Death of an Optimist. And you're always dropping singles and stuff. Find them and add them on Spotify. I am just a big fan. I might see you on Shiprocked. But as you said, there's dates on grandsonmusic.com. And anything else we didn't plug on this that you want to plug?
No, that's it. Festival season is coming. See if I'm coming around. I love you. Take care of yourself. Get vaccinated, please, so that we can keep doing this shit.
Okay, James, your plugs?
Yo, man, the James Madden on Instagram. Get with that. Commissioner Comedy Podcast. Get with that. Comedy Etiquette. That's what it's about on that show. Got a new one dropping with Shuli coming soon. Look for that. My album, the new one's coming out. Oh, man, I'm with Comedy Records, bro. Yeah, oh, she'll get congrats. No sequoias. They're out of, they're in Canada, baby. I'm an honorary Canadian. My new album is coming out called Check Spot in October. It's me answering questions from a drunk audience while they pay their bills. And listen to the Peanut Allergy song, Me with a Band. I haven't plugged that in a while, Spotify.
Oh,
go check
shit.
That shit out. I'd like to get a reaction out of
goddamn mouth. I would love it right now.
Yeah,
we don't
bitch.
Have the time.
Number
but
one,
nothing,
baby.
Nothing would make me happier than to have Shannon play it and let's see what grandson this
He's got
very
good energy.
Gifted guy thinks about your song, but I don't think we can make that happen.
He's
because
fucking
Shannon,
good
whatever.
Man.
No worries. All right, follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast called The Good Sugar Podcast on Health and Wellness comes out every Monday. And my book, which I don't plug in a while, that will hit top 100 on iTunes, on Amazon. Guide to Weight Loss and Fitness. But that's it, dude. It was a blast having you on. Shannon, I didn't see you, so I forgot for a second. I'm sorry. Shannon. Your plug, Shannon.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. And we have on lots of interesting people, comedians, porn stars, musicians, everything. Come on and tell their personal stories about bad dates, fights they've been in, and experiences with the paranormal.
All right, so now we got to do this with grandson. I have my lock on whether or not he believes in ghosts. I'm saying an unequivocal yes.
Yeah.
Hell no. Sorry.
No.
Wow.
Sorry, Shannon. Holy maybe if I'm going to have to listen to a couple episodes and then we'll reevaluate. But
wow, you don't believe in all? Wow, I would have guaranteed you believed in it. Is that what you guys thought too?
Of course, yeah. Now, yeah, I'm not going to fucking say I was going to be wrong. I was going to say yes, but it makes sense because he's a very logical person. I feel like he was reading deep things at an early age that probably proved that there's nothing after
that's
life.
That Canadian that fucking education. Yeah. They had him reading. Yeah,
agnostic up here. Sorry.
There it is.
First anybody's bubble.
Fair enough. And Shannon, what'd you say?
Oh, I was just going to say, so then do you believe that when we die, it's lights out, over?
Yeah. I kind of do. I haven't really wrapped my head around or made peace with that blunt reality, but that's what I'm working with these.
I will say this, in a guy that is a crazy logical dude myself, it has been proven that everything is made of the same energy and matter on a very microscopic level. So to think that it doesn't just transfer to something else is strange to me, because that to me makes total sense. If you look at a star, you look at us, you look at a table, on a microscopic level, we're all made the same. So there's got to be something.
Let's hit some salvia. Let's find out.
Let's get do it, man. I've never done it, but I'll try.
In Syracuse.
We're going to do it in Syracuse.
We're going to the Cuse, baby.
We add a song every week to our playlist. Pick one that you want us to add from Grandson.
A song from Grandson that you want to add to your new spanking new playlist. Shit. The first song off my album is called In Over My Head. Maybe start there.
In Over My Head, off of The Death of an Optimist. Dude, it was a blast having you on. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Ralph, I don't know if you're really ready to end, then we don't have to do this, but I do have James's song ready to go.
No, oh, shit. Do you have a minute?
I don't
want
to do it now.
Come on, bro.
He can listen on his own fucking time.
Come on. Please, James. James, please. Please, James.
I gotta pee anyway. I'm leaving the room. You guys do your fucking thing.
All right, give it to me.
All right, play.
God damn you, Shannon. You're out of the fucking will.
Here it is.
Thought I was gonna have to wait till the cues.
Here it is. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can hear it.
The verse is too long. All right, so I'm already.
You're not allowed to critique. Let him listen.
I don't care.
Okay. Do you want me to skip ahead a little?
I'd like to hear some words.
I'm about to utter something that's never been said before.
Afro man.
Man, I've been real bad for you millennials. That's right, baby. Everyone blames you for everything. Everyone thinks you're the people who created food allergies, that they never existed before you. Everyone my age and older always screams, back in my day, we never had food allergies. Well, guess what? I'm from back in your day, baby. 1978. And I have a peanut allergy. That's right. I feel like that was an AA meeting.
I'm going to skip ahead a little bit.
Oh, yeah, please do.
How long is it?
There's got to be a hook in there somewhere. Is there a hook?
Snitching little airline.
It's almost 5 minutes.
Oh, boy.
The captain, the pilot, whatever.
I have a lot to say.
It gets all dramatic. They used to, when they put you in the chair, would give you a last meal. I found this out because I said this old saying. I was like, I'm so hungry. I'm eating like I'm going to the chair. And then I found out they don't even do that anymore. Wild, man. Like, I don't know. I don't expect to ever go to death row. But if I do, and they give me a last meal, yo, I'm eating peanuts. I'm killing myself.
I don't know if there's a hook, but that there you go. So, wow. Grandson, now that James has left the room, he's applauding you, James.
Bravo, man. Bold. Bold. People don't speak up for the anaphylactics out there.
Fucking winner, everybody. God damn you, Ralph. Right. I'm the best.
You're kind of like a pastor.
Shannon, I'm the best.
Pastor's tone. Very, very preachy. Like, it's like an old MLK.
It's a comedy bit. So it's a bit. The New York Comedy Club wanted to do that, and I was the first one.
How about this? Maybe Grandson could remix it for you. That would be pretty cool.
Yes.
I would be honored, but I'm sure you're very busy doing your thing. But if you did, it would be great. And
Who produced it? Like, who are those instruments?
Well, there's a band, and that's it. But I also have another thing where I do my own thing. Look at this.
By the way, that was a great pitch.
I saw you bust out the axe earlier.
It was a great pitch. You said, I got a thing where I do my own thing. That was a really good explanation of what you do, James.
Public school, bitch. Public school, motherfucker.
Branson, honestly, dude, thank you so much. That was a blast. And you make me want to think I may go to Syracuse. That's what I'm thinking.
Honestly, I had so much fun. I could have kept going, man. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you so much. Awesome. We'll see you next week on the SDR show.
Yeah. When I was 9, I'd make...
You've been listening to the SDR show.